Good morning and welcome to another online Awaken sermon. And as you can see, this morning I have a guest with us. Ladies and gentlemen, Jake Kircher.
Hello, everyone. It's so great to be here.
Now, if you've been with us for a little while, you might remember Jake. Jake was with us, let's see, it was the fall, I'm trying to remember this correctly. It was the fall of 2017, I believe.
Yes. It was right before I got a job. So I was unemployed the last time I was with you guys.
Right before I got a job.
Yes.
That's kind of like the reference point for you.
Yes.
Pre-job, post-job.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, Jake, here's something that I'm not sure if you know this or not, but a lot of people, in speaking about your job, a lot of people have asked me after you came and spoke with us, they said, whatever happened to Jake? Did he ever get a job? Like, people were worried about you. They were worried for you. They wanted to make sure that you weren't, picking scraps out of garbage cans, but that you were doing all right. Your family was doing okay.
Yes.
So here is Jake. And what I want to do is I want to kind of follow up a little bit with the conversation from 3 years ago at this point, see where you are, where you landed, and then talk a little bit about church. Because church is obviously something that is extremely meaningful to you. You spoke about church when you were with us at Awaken. I actually have one person, and she constantly brings up, whatever happened to Jake, that sermon he preached about not going or being the church instead of going to church. She's like, that sermon really impacted me.
Oh,
so cool. I know as preachers, sometimes we wonder, hey, did the words that I said, the message, did it even get through to people? Well, for one person at least, yes, it did.
Awesome. Thank you to that one person. That's great.
Well, I'm sure it was more than that, but she's the one who's constantly referring back to your sermon. So let's talk a bit about that. Last time, as you said, you were in between jobs, you were unemployed, and you were thinking about, you had been a pastor for a while, and you were thinking about maybe moving in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that didn't really happen, did it?
It did not really happen very well. Much to my numerous attempts of interviewing and applying for everything else other than church jobs, everything kind of circled back around. I had a pretty profound interview experience at Bridgewater, which is the big hedge fund in Connecticut, and Ray Dalio's organization. And never ever thought I could get a job there, and yet somehow it was like the doors opened wide and the interviews, like I kept going. They do these big day-long group interviews. And so like I was the oldest one in the room by far and the only one without a finance background. And yet somehow I was like one of three that like lasted the entire day and kept building. So I thought for sure I was going to get a job there. But what was very interesting about their culture, they like bang you over the head with truth and honesty. It's a very challenging culture for many. And interestingly, what I walked away from that process with was the idea of whatever everything I think I know is true isn't. And so I had gone in knowing I was done being a pastor, didn't get offered a job there. It was like I went really far and then all of a sudden the door just slammed. But it opened my hands enough to some other ideas. So I ended up getting hired by Trinity Church. We have locations in Greenwich and Darien and a soon-to-be location in Larchmont. Got hired as a project manager on a temporary contract. 2 months later, was kept on long-term as the associate pastor. About 8 months later after that was made the, maybe it was a little longer, about a year longer, was made the location pastor for our Greenwich location. And then this past March was made the executive pastor. So I've had 4 job titles in 3 years and have had my hands at a lot of different things now in the church. I find myself back as a pastor. And what's been really fun about it, I've been just pleasantly shocked at the health of Trinity in so many ways, having come from situations that were less than ideal. And so that's been a really pleasant surprise for me and my family. But then a lot of the conversations that I've been able to be a part of and spearhead have been around church. What does it look like? How are we doing this? What does it mean to be the church? Like it was all of a sudden, it was like sermons were ready to go. I think the very sermon I gave with you guys was one of the, I think the second sermon I gave at Trinity in the same kind of content and asking some of those questions. So
you kind of used us as guinea pigs and then.
I did. Yes. You guys were the test run and it went okay. And nice. Yes.
Awesome, man. March. So you said you were at a bunch of different roles mm-hmm. and then just, well, like 5 months ago, March. And we all know what happened in March.
2 weeks before COVID, literally. It was like, hey, you get to be the one to manage all this now. Yeah.
So you've had your hands full over the past couple of months.
Yeah. So, I mean, March was just a sprint of change everything you do and get it online and all the different systems and structures that we had in place and was quite labor intensive and shifting to live stream and all of that. And then, yeah, we've been in Zoom mode, live stream, digital church mode for the last 5 to 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about a steep learning curve. Hey, here's your new job and here's everything we need you to do now.
Right. Yes, exactly. We've consistently kept talking about that of like, we didn't get this training. Nobody taught us how to like do online church and things like that. And I mean, you then add in some of the big conversations on race right now as well that have exploded, and we're in a similar boat. There's been a lot of internal comparisons to the idea of Moses being sent out to go and do stuff with Pharaoh and his reaction of like, I can't talk, I can't do this, like I don't have the skills that are for this. And so yeah, there's been quite an adventure of just going, okay, God, like we're gonna figure this out and. Yep. Do the best we can. So
one step at a time, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I know I'm joking. There was no, in seminary, there was no course, how to prepare for a pandemic.
Exactly. Yes.
Maybe now there will be.
I know. Right. Well, there's a lot of those courses I feel like they need for practical ministry out of seminary, in my opinion, but yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Well, let's back it up a little bit here because I think this is really interesting. Going back a couple of years ago, we had numerous conversations. I remember you were talking about that Bridgewater interview. I think we got together maybe like the day before you were about to go into the full day interview.
Yes.
And I know you were really excited about it. I mean, basically, like seriously, everyone, for a half an hour, you were talking, Jake was talking about the truth and honesty culture at Bridgewater. Mm-hmm. You loved it. I mean, that was something that was so, for you, it was so life-giving. So what was it, obviously, you know, going down that path and not being offered the job, but what was it that compelled you to get back into church ministry, back into a role as a pastor? Because I think your words, you just even mentioned it a little while ago, you were pastoring, like that was in the rearview mirror, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. What was the catalyst to get back in where you're like, all right, I can do this again?
Yes. Yeah. When I resigned, I remember from my previous church, it was like, I've been a professional Christian for 33 years because I grew up a pastor's kid and got my first pastor role when I was 18. And that's the only thing I've ever like known. And so, yeah, I was done. If I'm being completely honest, the initial motivation was simply just feeding my family and just was like, okay, every other door is closing. And for whatever reason, this Trinity one, I had explored early on in the process, backed out because I wasn't ready. And in a sense, miraculously, just in a, like it was meant to be dynamic, 3 months later, they still hadn't filled the role. And what was interesting is that I had applied for them for an operations director role. And the only reason I had interviewed was because it wasn't a pastor role. And I was like, maybe this will be like a Monday through Friday, more businessy side. Like I can be in what I know, but like have a break. But interestingly, what they discovered in their process was that they really needed a pastor-minded operations person. And so in a lot of ways, it just kind of clicked. But then, you know, the trial run of the project manager role was really good on both ends because it just, those 2 months of really getting to know the staff there, the culture, the heartbeat, as I referenced before, like the immense amount of health that I perceived there was so refreshing and very healing. And so that for sure was like, okay, like I'm going to get to be a part of something that's actually pretty healthy, but does have a very prophetic mindset of doing some things differently and being church and that being a really important dynamic of that. So
yeah,
all of the opportunities for a lot of the dialogues and conversations we're having now were very appealing.
That's neat. So it's like you open the door you put one foot in, then you just kept walking through. You're like, oh, let me just keep exploring this room and seeing what's in here.
Exactly. Yes.
That's awesome. And I know you are thrilled to be there. I remember whenever we grab lunch, it's always, oh, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. Here's the new things that we're doing at Trinity, and here's what I get to do. And I totally see God in this. And so,
yes,
that's great. That's, yeah, I'm happy for you. That's awesome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Now let's talk a little bit about the idea of being the church. As you mentioned, you took on a new role, executive pastor in March, and that's when things began to shift for all of us.
Yes.
Church went from being a building that you go to having many different forms, mostly online, live streaming, or, you know, watching a recorded sermon, whatever it might look like, meeting, having community groups or small groups virtually instead of in person. So what do you think are the biggest lessons that we as a church, and by church, I mean the church
at naturally,
the church globally, what do you think are the biggest lessons that we're learning about what it means to be church as a result of this pandemic?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously this is does not apply to every church in an organizational standpoint that I would know, but I do feel like there was I think nationally, on a bigger picture, there was for sure almost an idolatrous draw to the building, the show, the performance on Sundays. I mean, a previous church I was part of, that was the running line. Like, Sunday is the show. Sunday is our go time.
Yeah.
And while I don't disagree with that statement, like, offhandedly, ecclesiologically, like, being the church, it's 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, like, all year long. Like, this isn't just something we should do when we gather for an hour and a half. And there's something that I think is kind of beautiful in this moment that COVID is putting the spotlight on that tie. And I think you're watching nationally different people respond to that. In my own opinion, I think in watching other churches who are casting lawsuits and we have to gather together. I mean, frankly, there's almost been a subconscious thing for me of going, yeah, they're just worried about their offering plates. Like, come on, like, let's be honest. And again, that's just, like, you know, my critical side speaking. But it just, like, I get the importance of gathering. We talk about the importance of gathering all the time at Trinity, but we have to get out of just being about Sunday morning in a place.
Right.
It's got to be something we're living. And I think the churches that I'm impressed with are the churches who are kind of leaning into that. And I mean, I see it on social media all the time from certain people. Like, the church has not been put on hold. The church has not been barred from living out the mission that Christ has given us. Like, some of our buildings are closed. That's it. Or we have to gather in smaller numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But the church right now has this amazing opportunity to really live out the message of Christ outside of, you know, that hour and a half on Sundays, but in the greater parts of our lives. So I think there's something very exciting and prophetic about what's happening in the midst of all of the challenge and the hardships of COVID at the same time. Not saying God caused it for, but, like, you know, God redeeming the mess of the moment for really interesting changes to the church.
Oh yeah. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about those changes a little bit. And I totally agree with you. I understand the critical side that you're mentioning, but it's almost, man, you're pushing against something. It's like you're missing the opportunity of the moment.
Yes.
And there's so many opportunities being presented to us right now. And we can look at them and we can just say, well, I don't want that. So I'm going to push back because I want to go back to what I know, what was normal. Or we can just lean into it a little bit. And I mean, that's why I love the name of our church, Awaken. We can awaken to the opportunities that are being handed to us to step into. Okay, well, you know, what's the new thing that God has for us in this moment or as we step forward into the future?
Yes.
So let's talk a bit about changes.
Yes.
How do you see the church changing as we move forward from this? Because I think there's so many people right now who are saying church is going to look different.
Yes.
We can't go back to where we were. So we need to move forward with, you know, new normals, a phrase that so many people are saying. What do you think that new normal looks like for the church?
Yeah, so I think online is here to stay for good. We had a consultant that's worked with us in the past kind of put it this way. We've often referred to ourselves that we're one church in multiple locations. And so she was encouraging us to not think of ourselves anymore as a church with three locations that happens to do things online. You know, I'd say prior to COVID, we would post our Sunday morning sermon like so many churches. But really the heartbeat behind it was like, you can watch, but really we want you to watch and then come and join us on a Sunday.
Gotcha.
And her encouragement was, now we should be considering ourselves as an online church who happens to have locations.
Interesting.
And so like, how does that change the mindset? We've even debated and talked about, like, is this a fourth location for us now that we've got Darien, Greenwich, Larchmont, and online, and whatever that means and looks like. I think the way that a lot of online stuff is happening now is engaging. I mean, like, even in what we're doing, like, we're not pretending that people aren't just sitting on their couches and watching this and partaking or wherever they might be, right? Like, whereas most often when you would stream a live service beforehand, people on their couches were just like flies on the wall. Whereas now digital content, like, we rewrote a lot of our liturgies. We rewrote our communion liturgy because we couldn't just keep saying the words the way that you're going to walk up and receive in a moment. We're now acknowledging that you're sitting on your couch and you've got your grape juice and bread or wine or whatever. Or we've even built in a representative communion element that, like, you don't want to go get elements, but like, you can hold your hands out and just receive as we partake on the other end of the camera. And I think that online engaging piece is something that isn't going to go away either.
Yeah.
Or you're going to lose online participation later. Like, I don't think people are going to go back to just like watching the sermon. I think people are going to appreciate more of actually being talked to and engaged.
Yeah. So can you let's dig into that a little more. So I understand you, right. So you gave one illustration of rewriting some of the liturgy and the communion elements. What else does that look like to talk to people instead of talking at people online? How else have you guys, like, even the whole idea of, well, this is our fourth location online. Mm-hmm. I mean, any other ways in which you're practically doing that right now?
Yeah. So, I mean, we do a whole welcome and engagement piece at the front of our service now. So it's like talking to you at home and like, let's actually engage in the worship. This isn't just like hitting play on Apple Music or whatever, but it's like, let's actually engage in this. Every week we've had an online pastor. So we're using YouTube currently to do our live stream. And that's, I've done it the most out of all of our staff, because for a while I wasn't going in for the live stream and being more conservative for COVID. And it was really fun because it's like, you actually have all of these people asking questions and interacting, and, you know, sometimes it's more just, social, but, a lot of the times you'll have people asking really engaging questions in the middle of the sermon. And, you know, that's an element we didn't, you know, people weren't typically raising their hand in the middle of the sermon to interrupt. Right. But you kind of have that.
I used to always think it'd be great. I've seen this done before at conferences where you can tweet or you can text a question in the middle of a sermon. And then I did this actually last summer where I did like Q&A for the last 10 minutes after a sermon.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you guys are doing something similar, which I love that element. I mean, that's what a sermon should be, I think, right?
Yes.
You want that engagement.
Yes. It's funny. We've actually had a number of people say, whenever we go back live, can we still do that somehow? Like, it's like there are certain people who are really enjoying the ability to interact, or even simple things like when we quote an article, whoever's the online pastor will post the same article online so people can then read it. And so that's something that's actually been kind of scratching an itch that people want, even if we went back to live services.
Yeah, they want to really dig into it. Man, that's the thing. I just feel like with what you're saying, the sermon for so long has been talking. I mean, whether it's live in person or whether it's even digital, it's been talking at, here's my wisdom. Mm-hmm. But there's no interaction. There's no questioning, or, I mean, that's how we continue learning. I mean, think about how Jesus taught, right?
Yes.
One question after the next.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's how we all learn. Mm-hmm. I love that. That's really cool.
Yes. Yeah, that when that goes into, so right now, the other practical thing we've been doing has been house churches. And so like, we've kind of been going month to month right now. And so the idea being that because we're limited of how many people can gather in one place, let's have some localized places in your homes to get together and just watch the live stream so that you have, you know, the content from the service, but then a little bit of community. And there's something in that for me that like is really exciting, that almost feels like it goes back to like the Acts model of churches, of people gathering in houses and homes and over meals. I mean, it's almost been a dream of mine of like, well, what if every house church was sharing in like a brunch and a meal together afterwards and dissecting the sermons and talking and engaging together. And I mean, there was even at one point, so we, as I said, we have three locations, two of them were renting spaces. And so those are just not even an option. But another one, we were finalizing purchasing a building, and we had kind of a speed bump at the end that I was even like, what if we just didn't buy it? What if we never went back to our like physical locations? Like, what if we just continued to do this online thing, but like we had a dozen house churches around the area? Like, what would it look like if people were encouraged and challenged to just be a pastor within their home, within their neighborhood, inviting their friends and relatives to come and like be part of something localized that we're just providing training and speaking into? And, you know, we're not going to go that direction. I'm the most extreme on that one of like, let's just not open up ever again. But I do think that there's something intriguing and thought provoking about that kind of model. And even with the idea of going, okay, we're going to have four locations. I think that's kind of at my personal opinion right now, that if like with that online group, what would that look like to really lean into that kind of a model? And we've had people, weirdly, we've had people in North Carolina and Florida that somehow have said they've not been able to find churches in their area, but now have connected to us online, which part of me is like, isn't there a church in every corner in North Carolina? Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, down south.
Yeah. But for some reason, there are these little pockets. And like, even with that, I'm like, what would it look like to have like a house church model with that group of people in North Carolina? And gather them together and yet, you know, be engaging in this. So that's kind of that big out of the box question that I've been wrestling with a little bit.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, it just online, it has its dangers, of course. We all know that.
Absolutely.
But there are so many benefits to it as well. I mean, what you're saying about North Carolina, Texas, there's a group in one of those states or Alaska or wherever it might happen to be that really connects with your message and what you're doing.
Yes.
Man, I mean, imagine if you could virtually give them all the tools, the teaching, the training, and then they can have like a small little house church of their friends, their neighbors. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's one of the beautiful things about the world, the digital world that we're living in.
Right, right.
And this moment is showing us that that is a possibility. That's not some, you know, far out thing in the future. It actually can happen right now.
Right. Right. Yeah. And time optionality is another dynamic too, of like, you know, on the one hand, I think a lot of pastors, we talk regularly about like the consumeristic nature of like, sure. I mean, for instance, all of you watching this, are you watching it live? Or are you watching it at 2 p.m. on Sunday or Sunday night? Like, you know, it gives us this optionality. And it's interesting, but obviously there's a negative side to consuming information. Yep. And yet there is also like, how can you be strategic about that? So again, that's where like, for me, this house church dynamic, it comes up that if somebody had a house church gathering at 5 o'clock on Sunday to watch hours later, like, is that a bad thing? And
no,
so it just, again, it just raises some really interesting questions on how we do church and how we gather and what it all looks like.
Well, especially, I mean, you know, plenty of people who, they have to work on Sunday morning. And so they can't come out to a service if it's only on Sunday morning. Or think even about the sports, right? That's the whole debate, where sports on Sunday morning, is it God or is it sports?
Yes.
Maybe you can do a service a little later with your group of friends and you can still do the sports. You just get into a different routine or a different rhythm.
Yes. Yes. And on that flip side, think about the churches who are accommodating that anyways by doing 4, 5, 6 services throughout a weekend, right? Like in extreme cases of people who are working like 30-hour work weeks just between Saturday and Sunday. Sure. How much more healthy is it for a church staff, for a pastor, to be able to do it in this way that's actually packageable and viewable at different times too. So,
and then frees pastors up to get together with people more, have more conversations, do some more counseling, whatever it might happen to be.
Exactly. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like the possibilities are endless.
It is. Yes. Yes.
And I'm sure we're going to keep figuring it out, and some will gladly open their arms to whatever might be coming. And I'm sure it'll be like a tug of war trying to pull us back to where we were before.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I haven't quite heard any of the internet is the Antichrist claims yet. You know, the way drums were years ago, it's like, oh, the devil's music. We can't do that.
If you YouTube it, I'm sure.
I'm sure it is there. I'm sure it is there.
You just haven't looked hard enough yet.
Yes, nor have I wanted to. So yes, that's the
problem. When we're done, I'll Google it for you. I'll send over some links.
Perfect. Yes.
Now, hey, let's shift a little bit here because I don't think we can leave this conversation without talking about the race conversation that is at the forefront of our country right now. Yeah. And I know this conversation is something that is really important to you, to your family.
Yep.
So can you talk just a bit about what your personal experience, what your family experience has been, how you've been processing everything? You have a foster child who is with you guys. So can you talk a little bit just about that entire experience?
Yeah. Yeah. So we adopted our oldest son through the foster care process in Connecticut, and he's Black, he prefers to be called brown. Every time we use the term Black, he's like, I don't have black skin, I have brown skin. And so it's just, you know, very honest thing on his part. I really started, if you will, my white awakening with bringing him home from the hospital. And being exposed to just some different cultural dynamics. Part of the foster training is actually a whole session on cultural differences and how you respond to that. I've been doing reading over the years and conversations with family that are tough and just like really being exposed to a different mentality. So it's been very hard. We've talked a little bit in our church of like, why does it feel like so much now? Why is this not gone away now? And I don't know if it's simply COVID and the fact that we're all home and we're on our phones more and it's like in our face more. There's been both a sense of, in a sense, disappointment that it took this long. I know I have felt that even in that, like, you know, we're, as a church, we feel like we've been late to the party, but we're glad we're here now anyways. George Floyd was not the first. Ahmaud Arbery was not the first. There are lists and lists of others. But for whatever it is, you know, now is the time that it is popping. And actually there's been a huge momentum shift in that. So there's been a deep appreciation of churches really leaning into this and talking about it. And frankly, it's been interesting looking at church history. One, just going all the way back that the justification of slavery out of scripture. And I was just talking to a pastor before this call where he was explaining that if you go back to the Noah and Ham story, that early on there were arguments of like, no, we're like, this is their curse. Like Noah cursed his son. This is what like they're supposed to be living at. And another line that he was talking to me about of a justification of slavery for the sake of evangelism. Like we're actually saving these people. Wow. Like, and I'm just like, I cannot comprehend that. And then to a certain degree the abolitionist movement started largely out of biblical conviction and a Christian faith that I think more evangelically minded churches, when we kind of shifted out of the social justice stuff, for whatever reason, right? Like evangelical churches went more the evangelistic route, mainline churches went more the social justice, then there's been this separation. I feel like it's starting to come back together now. And that for sure gives me hope in being able to have tough and uncomfortable conversations and, from a personal standpoint, I mean, it's scary. I mean, my son has a personality that he's very assertive. He's a fighter. And there's a beautiful element of that in a justice sense. And yet it's also terrifying. I mean, every temper tantrum he has, it feels life or death. How are we going to help him respond to a police officer later or a different situation later in life? Later, there's news reports of kids getting into situations now, and his age, 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old. So, yeah, so it's uncomfortable, especially as white people. Again, that Moses reference of like, I wasn't trained for this. Like, I'm this white guy. I happen to get blessed to be able to adopt a black son and now thrust into the conversation. And we've talked to our senior team at Trinity. We're four white guys and a white woman. And it's a privilege to be in the conversation, and yet we're learning a lot and being very open-handed about it and just doing the best we can. But it's so important to get uncomfortable and just talk about these issues now.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's the key. Like you said, it's they're uncomfortable conversations, but they're necessary and they're important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure you've had a lot of those uncomfortable conversations just at home.
Yep. Yep. We've had a lot of uncomfortable conversations at home. My wife is brilliant at it. She has this way of being able to take like really sensitive topics and somehow just put them in a kid mindset and kind of lead the way in that. And but yeah, it's been uncomfortable. Like, I don't like having to show my son certain videos of things, like, but yet kind of have to from an awareness standpoint. And we've had friends and people of color who have advised us, like, you know, we've had to ask, like, when do you talk about slavery, racism? Like, when do you bring these things up? And they're like, oh, how old's your kid? And they're like, oh, he's 8. And they're like, oh, you're too late already. Like, wow. You should have been doing that. And that's just like, oh my gosh, like, this is parents, right? Right. It feels too young. It feels like you want to retain their innocence. Right. And yet the resounding message that we've gotten from friends who are of color have been like, you can't, like, their innocence is almost a threat, is like, you've got to be on this early. We're having them at home and doing a lot of reading and research and re-education as far as like American history and church history. It's been challenging to think about the things that I learned in middle school and high school, where some of the biases or the way that history was skewed due to the publishers or the authors of the textbook and what that means. Yeah.
So final question here. What is it that is giving you hope that things will change as it relates to race moving forward?
I think the biggest thing for me is simply just the immense amount of white people who actually seem to be ready to come to the table at this point. In response to George Floyd and everything, we launched a book group for Trinity where we read a book called White Awake by Daniel Hill, which is a phenomenal book, challenging, but really well written and a great book. And then another book called Beyond Colorblind, who the name of the author is blanking on me at the moment. We had 45 people though sign up for our group, and like 1:30 on a Thursday afternoon. This wasn't like, you know, the convenient weekend time or the evening.
Yeah.
45 people. And, and obviously most of that being, white people, and coming every week, engaging, wrestling, admitting fault, naivety, and then just this hunger of like, well, what do we go do now? How can we go and change this?
How do we respond?
Right. Yeah. And so it feels like there's been this massive shift that I'd say even as of 6 months ago, it felt like it was mostly just the Black community and the community of color who were voicing this issue. And then every so often you'd have these little like peaks because something would happen, but then it was like everybody would just go back to normal.
Yeah.
And it feels like for whatever reason, again, this time the table is full and like, I mean, we're being like demanded as staff, like what's next? What are we reading next fall? When can we have another webinar? When can we have a person of color come and preach? There's just like a demanding voice for it. And so that's the biggest thing that gives me hope right now.
That's really hopeful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The more people that are willing to have those conversations and to get uncomfortable and to learn.
Yes.
It's definitely how we've been talking a bit about that at Awaken and all necessary elements.
Yes. Goes right back to Bridgewater. What if everything I think I know is true isn't, right? It's all the theology of Ray Dalio right there. Yeah.
That's so it. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, this has been so much fun.
Absolutely.
Great to connect. Hopefully it gives our group a picture of what you've been up to since the last time that you graced us with your presence.
Yes. Hopefully I ask that you, one woman can now sleep at night, I guess. So just
I've been praying for that for a couple of years. So maybe this was an answer to prayer.
Yes, I'm good.
Hey, one final thing. Would you mind saying a blessing over us?
Sure. Absolutely. God, we just thank you for what you're doing in the midst of this moment. You know, the word uncomfortable came up a couple of times as far as COVID, as far as future of church changes, Black Lives Matter, all of the different issues going on with race and that movement. God, we pray that in the midst of that discomfort, that you would provide just a shalom and a peace. God, not to cover over or stop the discomfort, but yet to actually just navigate us through it. God, I think through the idea of having peace like a river, and the idea that at first glance that doesn't sound very logical. These rivers are rushing and moving, and they're constantly in motion. And yet the idea of that phrase is that a tree can fall in a river, and yet the water just adapts and goes around this thing in its path to continue its motion forward. So God, I just pray that that for both Trinity and Awaken, God, that you would just give us this sense of that we would continue on your mission and on your path for your kingdom work. God, we would ask that we would just continue being the church, that nothing, whether it be COVID or difficult conversations or the economy or a building, would not get in our way from being your people. God, just bless Dave, bless his family, bless this church community. And again, may we just live out the faith that you've invited us into to bring your kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven. So just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.